Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. I will be joined here very short order with my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow, and our very special guest this evening, Mr. Jeff Hall. But before we do, I want to start off with our normal regular scheduled programming, and that is we're going to talk a little bit about what the fuel prices are and how the freight rates have been performing throughout the country. And as of yesterday, we were showing that the national average price of diesel fuel crept up by 1.4 percentage points, showing that the national average price for diesel sits right now right around $3.66 per gallon nationwide. Spot rate normally drops in January, but not in 2022. Truckload pricing continues to climb in the new year. The last time spot rates increased in the month of January was way back in 2018. That was the start of a bull market that lasted well into June of that year. Loads moved on the DAT freight network increased by 35% last week for dry vans, up 17% for reefers, but down 4% for flatbeds. Carriers posted their equipment onto the DAT load board was 22% lower last week compared to the same time last year, underscoring the tighter capacity in spot market. So let's take a look on the three different segment types that we cover on the trend lines report, starting out with the dry van portion of the report. Taking a peek into the upper northeastern corridor, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate coming out of the northeast sits at about $2.81 per mile. Moving down south to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing that the average outbound rate for dry vans at $2.91. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing that that rate is at $3.33 per mile. Moving out of the South Central region, we're showing that that average spot market outbound rate for dry vans is at $2.79. And coming out of the West Coast, showing that the average outbound spot market rate for a dry van sits at $3.42. That leads the nation. Jumping over to the flatbed portion of the report, starting out up in that upper northeastern corridor, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate for flatbeds at $3.09. Moving down south to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing that the average outbound rate for flatbeds sits at $3.19. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing that that outbound spot market rate for flatbeds checks in at $3.37. Coming out of the South Central region, we're showing that that average outbound rate for flatbeds at $3.01. And wrapping up, coming out of the western portion of the country, that outbound spot market rate averages about $2.93. Changing gears and wrapping up with the temperature controlled or reefer portion of the report, starting out up there in the northeast as we normally do, showing that that average outbound rate for reefers at $3.16. Moving down to the south and southeast, mid-Atlantic states, we're showing that the average outbound rate checks in at $3.14 per mile. Climbing back up into the Midwest, showing that the average outbound spot market rate checks in at $3.90 for reefers. And moving out of the South Central region, we're showing that that average outbound spot market rate checks in at $3.50. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast and the western part of the United States, leading the nation by one percentage point, I mean by one penny, rather, they edged out the Midwest, showing that that average outbound rate sits at $3.91. And with that being said, and without any further ado, where did he go? I was looking for my co-host. There he is. He's down there hiding in the call queue. Mr. Chuck Snow, good evening. How are you?
We're good, Rico. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. I tell you, it's a good problem to have with rates continuing to climb into January, which things overall seem to be moving in a very positive manner as far as the rates are concerned. But tonight we got a very with all of this prosperity that's going on, we have a very, 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 very timely subject matter that we kind of need to touch up on, and we got a special guest with us to help us out this evening. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, Jeff Hull is a he is a private investigator with Transit Investigations out in California, and Jeff's got his hands full. And he was willing to join us for an hour tonight, share some of his time with us and tell us what's going on out there as far as thefts of cargo and trucks and what our listeners can do to prevent being a victim of cargo theft or truck theft. So with no further ado, Jeff, welcome to our show.
Let's welcome Jeff in and on board. Good evening, Jeff.
Hi, Rico. Hi, Chuck. I'm honored to be here. Thank you very much for the invite.
Oh, thanks for
taking the time to join.
So, tell us a little bit about, so our listeners that haven't aren't familiar with you, what you do and what you've been doing and what you've been seeing, and then we'll start talking about it.
Okay. Well, just so the listeners know, it's mentioned in California, but I'm actually based in Dallas, Texas. The reason our company's based in California in the Long Beach area is because the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach sit side by side in San Pedro, where 13 million containers come in every year. And when those containers start moving around being transported, that's when theft occurs, especially when they're put into a yard or they're parked on the street. Whenever they stop, that's when theft starts to occur. Dallas is very, very key because it's the second busiest cargo theft venue in the United States. And people a lot of times equate it because of perhaps being to the border, but it's not. It's got mostly to do with the area up north by Texas Motor Speedway, which is called Alliance Business Park. There's every major electronics company you can think of up there, and organized crime groups have targeted those for years, especially on the holidays. So that's what's made us the number two cargo theft venue here in Dallas. Plus, we've got gangs on the south side that are very, very prolific with cargo theft. And also just carried a bit farther because the many clients that we have, I've had the opportunity to travel all over the United States and Canada to do cargo theft. I mean, when insured, you know, wherever something's stolen, if it's one of our insureds, I go. So that's why I've got a network throughout the United States and Canada. I know everybody that does cargo theft in North America, I know. They're a good friend of mine. And through that, we get a very, very good indication of what's going on throughout the country, what relates to what, and like I said, we pretty much see it all.
Well, I believe that.
Very interesting.
Go ahead, Rico.
No, it's very interesting. He made mention about the gangs and the organized crime. We've seen. Everybody seen the old Godfather movies and all that stuff, and you know you get enamored by all of that stuff. But they tell you would think that now that with all of the things that have happened since that era in particular, that the organized crime maybe has been put in that. But from the sounds of things, it doesn't really sound that way. It sounds like they still kind of. It's still kind of a thriving network.
Well, it is, and the gangs vary. Like the listeners would be very interested. Since September of 20 to date, something's happened that's been unprecedented in our industry from the inception, and that's been we've had over 80 cargo thefts in Southern California by the same group, same MO. And what they've done is they figured out where the major computers are being manufactured and shipped from. For example, if it's Asus, it's Newark in Silicon Valley. If it's Dell, it's Torrance. If it's Acer, it's Compton. And they know that. So what they've done is started doing raw surveillance, and they'll pick trailers. And this involves a big box carrier that's got a huge distribution center in Danuba, California. So you've got trucks going both ways, being followed from north to south, south to north. And once these loads are picked up, and the drivers stop and leave the freight unattended overnight, that's when these thieves steal the loads or pilfer them, one of the two. And it's just becoming an epidemic. I've had a lot of major companies or clients will call up and say, hey, I've had 13 thefts. Well, those 13 are part of these 80. And out of these 80, I've probably investigated 30. So what we've tried to do is look at each theft, and because somebody will say that, you know, they've had we've been hit 8 times. They say, okay, well, how many, when were the dates? And then we'll look, well, how many trailers were shipped out that day? And we find out, well, 6 trailers were shipped out of that venue. Okay, if they're shipped out, why was that one the one that was followed and taken? So we've went in and broken down all these thefts, all 80, from all the venues, and we've got a pretty good picture of what's happening. And a lot of people thought there was a lot of inside involvement in that, but there's not. It's just raw surveillance. I mean, we've looked at the loads that went out. Like, say there were 4 trailer loads that went out, and one of them got what got stolen. We'll look at the BOLs and check the values. And there's just no rhyme or reason. Like, sometimes a load will be followed and stolen. It's not nearly as high a value as the other 3 that went out that day. So that tells us there's not – I mean, if you were picking loads, you'd pick the highest value. And that's not always the case. So that's why we know it's just general surveillance. Plus, we've went there and watched videotape and see cars circling outside or driving back and forth waiting for a trailer to leave a venue. So we've got that figured out. We know who's doing it. We know about this group. They're a very historical cargo theft group out in Southern California, and they're very, very good at what they do. They will assimilate into a facility a lot of times, get out the yellow vests, start directing traffic, and people think they're employees. And we've been dealing with these guys for probably 10 years, and both in Norco,
wow,
and NorCal and Southern California. And the thing about it, guys, that's really crazy, that drives us insane, I got to be careful because I'll start to go down a rabbit hole that I could talk about for an hour. But one of the things that's driven us nuts all these thefts is we've never, ever recovered anything these guys have stolen. And that's kind of odd because for years, especially Southern California, we've got the different task forces out there. There's 3 major task forces, or there was, now there's down to 2. They've got informants. So if something gets stolen, like a load of computers, you know, the detective will call me and say, hey, are you guys missing, you know, a load of Acer computers? They said, yes, as a matter of fact, we are. So they say, well, I've got an informant. He's got some information. So then we'll say, buy a couple of them. We'll compare serial numbers, and if that's ours, then we'll go about trying to play the cat and mouse game of making a buy and recover the load. That's stopped. That just does not happen today for a variety of reasons. It's made our jobs that much harder. But we've had all these cutbacks with police defunding, a lot of attrition, a lot of things that went on a couple years ago with the rioting. Those guys were pulled off doing their job, doing tactical, and it's just, we just don't have the same amount of detectives doing cargo theft as we have before. But like I said, this particular group, it's been very, very frustrating because they've stolen millions upon millions of dollars of product. And it's not just electronics. I've had them steal things from Fashion Mall up in downtown Las Vegas, the high fashion apparel, handbags, things like that. None of it's ever been recovered.
We had an incident here in Atlanta.
I was just going to say,
here in Atlanta, you know, UPS has its major hub right here in Atlanta. And we had an incident right here right before Christmas, I believe it was, where UPS's hub is, they go right through a really sketchy part of town. And at the red light, this was very brazen how this happened. And at the red light, when the UPS driver stops, he was driving the tractor trailer. It wasn't a box truck. He was driving the tractor trailer. Guys ambushed him at the light and commandeered him put a zip tied him and threw him in the passenger seat and commandeered the truck and drove it to a location a couple of miles away where they had another truck sitting there waiting and offloaded the cargo. You know, I don't know if they were looking for anything specific or whatever, but they unloaded a good bit of the cargo onto another smaller box truck. But he was driving a tractor trailer, and UPS finally kind of caught on to that the driver hadn't made his first stop or whatever, and they finally, I guess, tried to ping his location or whatever. But he was still zip tied up in the truck when they got there to him. So it's been with everything that's going on. Theft has been really, business has been picking up, to say the least.
Well, this group that I was telling you about out in Southern California, for years they do box trucks. I mean, there's a particular shipper that ships some memory and CPUs, and when they would go out, there would be a box truck to be followed. And as soon as the driver stopped to use the bathroom or get something to eat, they would pull up in a white van, unlock the back door, and grab as much stuff as they could and then take off. Well, it was pretty high-value dollar stuff, so even a pilferage would usually result in over $100,000. But then in the spring of 2 years ago, they graduated to an FTL, you know, full trailer load. And they followed one going out of Southern California that was on its way to Texas, but the driver stopped in Coachella at a drug stop. The team drivers, they both got out and went inside. Well, luckily, there was a couple sitting in their car, and they saw this van pull up, so they started filming, and it was our guys. They were in a white van with hoods on, popped the back door of that truck, and it would think the FTL value was $15 million. And they pilfered as much as they could in a very small amount of time and got like $3 million of the product and then sped off. Well, ever since then, that's when they've kind of graduated to following these FTLs, when they're going between NorCal or SoCal from a shipper to this big box DC, or it's picked north or vice versa. You know, the guys will pull into their yard in Chino or Bloomington or somewhere out there and leave the rig overnight unattended or drop the trailer. And those guys have followed them, so they just wait for them to leave, and they come back a couple hours later and just go in there and usually steal the whole FTL, but if not, they'll pilfer the majority of it. And it's millions of dollars every time.
Wow. It sounds like these guys have a big, just as big an industry as the guys that make the equipment that's being stolen.
Well, the thing is that like I said, I've always been intrigued by these guys. And like I have to emphasize is we've never recovered any of the products they've had, where most thieves we have. But these guys are very, very good at what they do. We've long time anticipated, or I should say anticipated, have prognosticated that this stuff gets put on in the shipping container and gets shipped out of the country, all this product, because it just doesn't show up. When we get something, and it'll happen where it's incrementally, but, you know, the tests, where's the cops working on something, they get a tip, they hit a warehouse a lot of times, they'll go, well, gee, there's product in there from a theft, 8-9 months ago, along with the other stuff. That's how we usually do recoveries. But that just never happens with these guys. It never happens. There's never product that you go into and you stumble across stuff that that you hadn't thought about. To further that point, here in Dallas locally, we had the largest recovery in the history of this city this past year. I had a load of vacuum, or four containers of vacuum cleaners got stolen over on the east side of town, and we knew who did it. And it was a matter of kind of playing a cat and mouse game, getting informants to talk. And during that, the FBI had a case going on. It had nothing to do with cargo theft. It had to do with some stolen communication devices. Well, they ended up, through all their triangulation and all their work, they find this warehouse, and we hit it, or they hit it, and then all of a sudden they're like, Jesus, what's this product doing here? There's more than just phones. There's all these vacuum cleaners. It was packed full. And they didn't know how to handle it. They never handling like that. So they called us, and they're like, well, yeah, that's our load. That's our load. And it was, like I said, the largest recovery ever, and I think 100 people got indicted. And they're still going through that product to figure out what all it is. So that's usually what happens, is a lot of these recoveries are made where you're going after one product, but you go in, and there's things you don't even think about. Or like, well, gee, that load there, that was 7 months ago. And you forget it all about it, because so much of the stolen product is warehoused. And then they open up their own e-trade business. They put different labels on it and sell it as if it's their own product.
Wow, this is unbelievable. So,
well,
tell me something. What would the losses be for the tech industry in any given year from cargo theft, would you think, when you add all these customers' years up?
Well, they've had, you know, they just always say that for years it was always thrown the number of $50 million a year was thrown out to it. The cargo theft. I think it's much higher than that, because you have to understand, Chuck, that not everything's reported. I mean, some things will happen.
Right.
And, what should happen is you should contact your insurance carrier, say, hey, we had a loss. You check the commercial invoices and you get an exact dollar figure of what your loss is. But there might be something that gets misplaced, or there might be something that they don't want to report. So we don't even really have an accurate dollar figure on what, but we know it's in the millions, and like I said, it's on some of the stuff where you can't ever track it or find out where it goes. It makes it even more difficult. But like I said, I can't quote you an exact figure now. I don't think anybody's got a number right now, really, of how bad
it is.
But,
if you're talking something anywhere even near $50 million, then there's got to be a much better, more secure way of shipping these things. You know, we're not talking about pallets of cornflakes here. No disrespect to the Kellogg's company. We're talking about a very expensive product. Maybe it shouldn't be shipped the same way you would ship breakfast cereal. From the sounds of it, there's not a whole lot. You would think there would be an armed security detail, or they would go in convoy or something to make it much more difficult for thieves to take this stuff.
Well, and you bring up some good points, and there are things that are suggested and are tried, but they're not always, the protocol is not always followed. Like, it's always been historic with high-value loads. You assign team drivers. The load board years ago started all this, and this is where a lot of theft happened with fictitious pickup, but he figured out what was going on, and through a lot of work, we pretty much have done away with that. But still, what the load board would ask for would say it's the load going from, for example, Brea, California, to Carlisle, Pennsylvania, coast-to-coast load. And they would say in there, you've got to have at least $250,000 of cargo liability insurance to bid on this load, and team drivers required. Right. Well, one thing, high-value load. And it would usually be a 3PL like you are, Chuck. You know, and that means you might handle Budweiser beer, Bed Bath & Beyond, and Interstate Battery. So they don't know what the commodity is. They just know it's of high value. So they'd bid on the load and show up and pick it up. And, they don't care. But with all that that's going on, there's some tracking devices go in. There are some armed escorts. But getting back to what you said, and it's right what we were talking about just before the show started, what's going on in L.A. with the trains, where you saw that debris there in downtown L.A. off the Union Pacific tracks. Those containers have to be more secured, because thieves can, whether they're stopped or whether they're going slow, they'll jump on those trains, the screwdriver and a hammer, and they'll compromise the lock. And then they start going through. And there's everything under hell. There's pillows, tires, apparel, electronics.
Right.
And that's why we were just talking about that. I just got from back just hours ago from being out there a week, and I was talking to the people. And I said, there's got to be a better way to secure these containers. There has to be. And these locks aren't working. Maybe some kind of a weld or something that's put on the doors or something, because it's just, I mean, I don't know how many people in our audience have seen those pictures from downtown Los Angeles with that debris.
We should just take a second and we can describe what those photos are. And I'll do my best to describe it. It was a railway track area, a freight area, and it was littered with debris. And at first you didn't know what it was, and then what it said was that it was the remnants of thieves stealing freight out of rail cars. We always thought, I'm old school, don't go near a railway car ever. Don't go near even a rail yard, because the railway bulls were famous for, they were all Rico size, and those guys had they were merciless if they ever caught you. Not that we ever did anything, but that was the rumor. Don't, just be careful. Mind your P's and Q's if you go near those places. I guess things are different now. It doesn't seem to be a fear.
One of the biggest problems right now, and it's not just in Los Angeles, but that's where it's paramount. When you've got the prosecutor, the DA in L.A., that's made it so he doesn't really care to arrest anybody that steal something of less value than $950. Well, $950, he gets pretty nice stuff for that. So these thieves know that. They know that they're not going to get arrested for what they're doing there, or if they do, it's going to be a slap on the hands. They'll be out the next day, or they'll probably even just be issued a ticket. And we see that throughout the country. I think here in Dallas-Fort Worth, we've got a liberal prosecutor, and I think for a couple of years now, it's been $750 that they're only going to ticket you, that you won't be charged. So most of the cities have fallen into that. So really, what do you expect? I mean, people just aren't fearful of getting caught when they steal stuff.
Yeah, you can't. It's funny. You can't really please all the people, because if you remember 10 years ago or so, there was a jailer in Phoenix. I think his name was Warden Joe Arpino or something. And he was brutal. And the story was, if you ever ended up in his jail, which was a bunch of tents, you would never do anything to break the law again. You wouldn't even jaywalk.
That was Joe Perro.
I know he was very in Phoenix.
That was
very unpopular with a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, because he enforced, you know, he enforced the law. Well, what they tried to do there is they tried to make that such an unpleasant experience that you won't go back there. That's the whole idea of incarceration.
Yeah, I would think. Yeah, exactly. But I think we've gotten away from that. It's certainly not for rehabilitation, and it's not for punishment. So there's really no downside to a lot of people being incarcerated.
True. And getting back to the area which you brought up was very key when you're talking about the securing of loads. I've had four cases that I was working on, two of them when I was out there just this past week, where you've got a large distribution center that's right off, that's just south of 60 freeway. And if, say, a truck driver shows up there late, they'll say, well, you're late, we can't accept your load until tomorrow. Well, that forces the guy to spend the night. And there's a truck stop just down the road. They go down there, and you have to have a reservation. It's full of time, so the drivers can't get in. But what there is if you start heading back toward the D.C., which is just less than a mile away, there's a wide shoulder where you've got a variety of tractors, trailers, rigs, just parked end to end to end. So a lot of these drivers do, they'll pull in there and drop their trailer, put a kingpin lock on it, and then go eat or go visit a friend. When they come back with us overnight or a few hours later, their trailer's gone. And these are loads that are $400,000 or $500,000 every time. And, you know, you look at the driver's not a thief. He just didn't make a good decision.
No.
He's not a thief. Because they don't really, unfortunately, and Chuck and Rico, you both know this, you guys handle truckers, they don't get paid any more if they're hauling a $1 million load or a $10,000 load. So they're probably not the stewards of product that you'd really like. That's just the way the industry is. So, and then another thing that's gone on now that's paramount in the industry is, if you guys have been paying attention and you look at the ships that are moored off the out in the harbor there at Long Beach and in San Pedro, is that you're having so many of these containers being offloaded and the lock capacities can't handle it. So a lot of these containers are being parked along the street that's got, you know, they've got seals on them, and they're just sitting there for thieves to take. And there's no way those all can be secured. And that's become a huge problem because they just can't, there's not enough drivers to move all this cargo. And that all happened a couple of years ago. I don't want to get off on a rant here, but that was a political decision to try to make, to do away with the independent trucker. They wanted to get everybody unionized and all that. And what it does is, when you're talking,
we've talked about that on this show a lot.
When you're looking at drayage drivers, that's kind of that's what, you know, a lot of guys don't want to do that, but a lot of the guys will, and they make a fairly good living at it. But when you eliminate them from doing it, well, you got the problem that we're having right now.
My God, what a mess! So tell me something. I know they're dropping loaded cans on the street. Can the container lines, or whoever owns the container yard that's using the street for extra storage, can they not put hired private security watching that group of containers? My God, there's enough money to warrant it.
Well, you could, but, you know, you get into a there's also the, you know, there's an honesty factor. If you come to me and say, I've got all this business, and I say, oh, don't worry, we've got a secured yard, you probably don't give it a whole lot of thought. You assume that I've got a secured yard. Where, and you know, and then those guys, you start hiring extra security and security for all that, it brings your cost up. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
Sure.
It's just the way it is. But there's a lot of times.
But you're the custodian of somebody's goods.
Yeah, but I've had times where I've had a client come in and say, well, we're missing product. And we'll go over to their yard, and it's so unorganized. They're like, well, what are our containers doing on that street over there? What are our containers doing on this street over here? And the guy will say, this capacity, we just don't have the, you know, we've got too much business. And we've had times where they can't even hardly determine the amount of loss they have or what containers belong and what ones don't. I mean, I've never seen it like it is right now. And a lot of times we've had this happen a lot. I was just out there 3 weeks ago, and I got a call that guy had a container missing, and I found the container on the way over to interview the guy. And when we found it, we went on the side and knocked on the side, and it was obvious the container was full. I think it was an Amazon load. And what it was a bunch of plasticware for wine glasses and pitchers and stuff. Well, again, it was a full trailer, had a seal on it. Thieves see it. They don't think anything about it. They grab it. Once they open it up and see what's in there, hell, it's useless to them. There's no secondary market on that. But they grab it because it's there and it's got a seal on it. Simple as that.
Let me jump in really quickly. I'm going to jump in really quickly. I want to let our listeners know and the callers that are listening live right now, if you press number one, that puts you in the queue. We'll try to get you mixed into the show. We'll take some questions if you got questions, or if you want to add a comment, feel free to do so. But press the number one and be listening out. I'll try to get to you as the conversation continues. Okay, gentlemen, I just wanted to jump in real quickly and say that to let our callers know that they wanted to ask a question, sure, that they could.
Jeff, let me ask you something. On the for our listeners, that our typical listener is somebody with between 1 and 10 trucks, normally 1 to 5, and they're all, everybody's having an issue. You know, it's a single it's a single guy running a truck, or it's a couple that have 5 trucks. Everybody is facing the same dilemma that holds anything of value. If you could give some ideas of best practices to avoid becoming a victim for a small operator, what would they be?
Well, first is, if you're going to, the best thing is to have live loads, is to pick up and deliver the same day. Pick up in the morning and deliver in the evening. But to me, there's various reasons. We went over that with a lot of shippers, and they said, oh, we can't do that because of this. But the thieves will figure out what time that shipments are going out, and that's when they'll follow them. But that would eliminate a lot. Like, that's what we said, what's going on out in California on all these 80 loads. If they would actually pick up the morning in Southern California and deliver to the consignee in the evening, there would be no theft. But that'd be the first thing. Number two, if you do have to take it overnight, put it in a secured yard. And as you guys both probably know, when you talk to somebody about what a secured yard is, you'll get stuff all over the place. I kind of laugh because there is a defined designation that the insurance company looks at as a secured yard, lighted, gated, guarded. You know, that in all these places, it'll just be somewhere off the road and it's got bright lights, it's got a pipe gate. In these cases, I think that's a secured yard. Well, it's not. But if you have a yard where you've got, you know, security, it's locked, you've got sign-in, sign-out procedures of every vehicle that goes in and out of there, you very rarely find those yards being hit by theft. It's the place that just has maybe a fence. It might have some kind of electronic gate, which can be easily compromised. And those guys, those people think that's a secured yard, but it's not. So that's number two, is make sure you have a secured yard that actually meets a secured yard criteria. And also, we see this all the time, where a driver will stop real quick and think, well, I forgot something, or I've got to go here. I'm going to drop my trailer right here. And then bobtail over somewhere, and I'll be back in an hour. Will they do that? Thieves are watching for that kind of stuff all the time. They see a sealed load parked on the street near a large distribution center. They're going to boost that load. So that's another thing that they just simply should not do. And the other thing that we've run into a big problem is a lot of these, and I'm not being disrespectful, but I'd call them marginal carriers. You know, somebody that's got maybe 2 to 5 trucks, works their butt off, but is – pick up a load, and this happens all the time with a lot of these electronics loads. They're not told the value of the load they're picking up, and a lot of them only have $100,000 for the cargo liability insurance. Then when they get a theft and they get told that, hey, that's $500,000 load, they're like, well, hell, I would never pick it up if I'd known it was $500,000 load. There needs to be more communication between the brokers and those independent carriers.
Right. Now, that should
we
be
talk
on the
about that.
Lead
we talk
to
about
the
that a lot here on this show.
Yeah. By rights, should it not be a side contract that everybody is aware? Like, if you're a trucker and you're being asked to be responsible for $500,000 worth of cargo, you should be able to charge more. You should be able to, if you don't have the extra $400,000, you should be able to know that you're at risk and be able to buy that, which you can.
True, that's but a lot of times what will happen is you'll have a large company that gets a request, they have got 4 trailers, they need to go now. Well, they might not have, they might be a fairly large company. I've had this happen with major carriers, and they have no power in the area. So then they have to start brokering it down to anybody that can pick it up. And I've seen the case we had years ago where a small trucker that had $100,000 of liability insurance picked up a cell phone that had $8 million worth and got stolen. So it becomes such a frantic thing to move so much freight. There's just so much freight being moved out there. A lot of times the things that should be done, Chuck, all the, like you said, the I's being dotted and the T's being crossed just doesn't happen because there's just not, they just don't have the time. I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but we just see that all the time.
It's true. You know, I remember years ago we had a customer in the computer business in Southern California, and they were getting hit really hard, and it was gangs, and apparently the gangs had actually infiltrated the shipping area, and they were had people working in there, and they had gone as far as, and I don't know whether you've ever heard of this one, and this was 20 years ago almost, they were putting tracking units inside the trailers.
Yeah.
So they could tell where they were, and they were hitting these, you know, they were hitting everybody, and a bunch of their big carriers got together and said, you know what, we're out of here unless you, you know, said to the computer company, you people need to cover anything over $250,000. And they did. And we all had contracts with them that we would not be liable for anything over 250. But it was brutal.
So we got a couple of callers that got some questions they want to throw at you. You ready for some questions?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go to Lonnie first. Lonnie, you're up and live with Rico, Chuck, and Jeff. How can we help?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Jeff a question. My deal is with the auto theft industry of so many auto thefts in the United States, they put OnStar on the vehicles, which gave law enforcement the capability of tracking anything that was stolen. Why can't we require the container company to do more security to help law enforcement and people like Jeff track down thefts?
Well, there are some, and there's a company that's run by a very good friend of mine that has a platform that what they do is they have multi-level. They might have information on the driver's telephone. They might have – they've got – they're tracking that rig by maybe five or six different devices or, you know, it might be the ELD. It could be the guy's phone. It could be a number of different devices. And those have worked out fairly well. But I think what happens, Lonnie, is that it gets into a numbers game, too, with expense. I mean, we've for years said, well, how come every trailer's not got a tracking device on it? It's got a high-value load. And you get into issues like, well, some draw the high-value barrier of $750,000. So it falls below that. It's $658,000, so it doesn't get a tracking device. And then we get into things like that they're like, well, gee, you know, is that very bright? But those are some of the decisions that go on. And also you have to equate it. When you look at how many trailers are moving throughout North America at one time, how many get stolen? It's really damn few on a percentage basis. But,
right.
Like, I hate to be morbid about what I always say. It's just like, look how many airplanes are in the sky at one time in North America. What happens when one of them crashes? Mm-hmm. It's catastrophic.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like cargo theft is. Usually when there's a, you know, it's a small percentage, it's a lot of money. It's high dollar.
Well, who's eating all this cost?
What's that?
Who's eating all this cost?
The two runs this whole entire industry. It's the insurance companies. I mean, the insurance companies run this whole industry because you have to, I know this sounds simple, but it's true. Everything that ships insured. It doesn't mean the product's insured, the equipment on
right.
the product's insured. So the insurance company comes into the big play. And things a lot of people don't understand is what we're dealing with. We've got a small window of opportunity to recover product and mitigate a claim. Because that's where most of my business is with our insurance carriers. And they trust us because they want us to manage a case, make sure we get law enforcement involved, put out BOLOs, work with our network, because they know we've got the best possibility. That's the best possibility of recovery and mitigating a claim. But we've got limitations. And like I said, there's a good example. Let's say you have four containers of Christmas sweaters get stolen in L.A. How much time do you get to recover those before they lose their value? Hell, if you recover in April, it doesn't matter. They might have a value of $350,000. If you get them in April, who wants a Christmas sweater? It's set to be salvaged. So you get into a lot of issues of how much timing you've got here. You've got a very small window of opportunity
right.
to actually recover things and mitigate a loss. That's why I was kind of laughing, like something will happen like 8 or 9 months, maybe a year later. and you go into warehouses, we've got there's all that high class apparel that we had stolen 2 years ago. But there again, now it's 2 years old. Is it still fashionable? So yeah.
Right. So Lonnie, did you get your question answered, or did you have a follow up?
No, that was perfect. But I think that having a better tool that Jeff can follow up on, such as they do for autos and everything else, I just think that the container company should, what's it cost to put a tracker on it? And if it's of any value, and right now that the high theft is in the cargo theft, so I think there's got to be more kind of tools available out there that would assist Jeff and law enforcement in having a quicker recovery time.
And Lonnie, there is. I mean, I just went through this when I was out in California this past week. We've had a theft out there where we actually, there was a trailer from a big company that I do work for, and when we had a yard worker that has a very good conscience, he knew stuff was not right, so he starts taking photographs of trailers leaving. So we ran plates and we had trailer numbers. Well, I ran this one plate. He comes back to this big trucking company. I know the security people. I called them and said, "Hey, did you have a trailer out in such?" And they like, "Well, that's our trailer, but God, what's it doing there?" I said, "I don't know." They said, "The good news is it's got a tracking device on it, and it's active. We can tell you where that's at right now." And I said, "Well, what about historical?" He said, "We got it." So this is an active case I can't get into great detail about, but the good thing about it,
right.
Now we went back and looked at the exact dates. We know that trailer was got to the shipper and the day that it left, and we went back and looked at that tracking device, and we know exactly when the product was uplifted, and we know exactly where it was taken to and offloaded. Now, we'll be getting search warrants and hitting that place here in the near future, but that's exactly what Lonnie's talking about, and there's no doubt. It's a game changer. It's a breadcrumb trail that we don't have normally. And,
right.
What was funny about that, there was an initial detective. I started talking with that out in California about it, and this detective said, "Well, I don't think you have a case. You have no evidence." I said, "Don't have any evidence." I said, "Hell, we'd give our – I've got to be careful what I say here. So we give anything to have that kind of information on thefts. We've got tracking information that was uplifted from the consignee and where it was taken, and you're saying we don't have any evidence?" Well, that case got reviewed by their department, and now it's a full-blown investigation with their cooperation.
Wow. Unbelievable.
But no, Lonnie, you're right. I mean, if we had tracking devices on containers, trailers all the time, it would drastically increase the recovery rate. And especially today when we don't have the street informants, it makes it very, very difficult.
Oh, we do have.
We got another call.
Containership, come in. Okay, go ahead.
No, we had another caller that wanted to get a question in as well. Let's welcome Stephen to the show. Stephen, how are you this evening?
Hey, we do appreciate y'all taking the call. I think the biggest problem with theft and the reason why theft is being able to happen the way it happens is the lack of communication. For example, it's been about 2 years ago. I picked up a load, a high-value load, had to deliver in Atlanta off of Fulton Industrial. And when I picked up the load, you know, I was given the instructions of what I need to do, you know, don't stop within 2 hours and, mm-hmm. you know, and keep communications, all this stuff. And I did everything that I supposed to have done. Got to the receiver and got there and checked in. Receiver had like a lack of urgency, a lack of, I don't know what to even call it. And they was like, well, we don't have room for the product, and we don't have room for you to sit out here on the yard, so you need to go down to the QT and park. And I'm like, wait a minute, I got this product on my truck, and here it is, 2 o'clock in the morning, and you telling me to go down to the QT and park. But long story short, I wound up having to go to that little ranky-dank truck stop up the road from the QT just to find a place to park. Okay, While I was there parked, of course, I was sitting in the front seat, you know, doing my paperwork and everything, and car pulls up, and truck that was parked beside me, they popping the locks, opening the doors, going in the trailer while the driver next door was asleep. And I'm sitting here looking at all of this. You know, thank God that I'm authorized to carry, because he was coming to my truck. And, you know, not whenever he whenever he saw me, you know, he just jumped up. You know, he I guess I spooked him, but he jumped up and took off and went to running. And you know, and I'm like, so that next morning, of course, I didn't get any sleep that night. That next morning, I went back to the receiver, and I explained to him what happened, and I explained the urgency of, try to make my case, the urgency of the delivery and all of the high profile load. And their response to me was, well, it's not responsible to us till it get on the dock. And I'm like, you know, I almost went through the roof whenever he said that. And I'm like, wait a minute, you know. I said, what make you want to even say something like that? And he said, well, if it's on your bike and something happened to it, it's on you, not me. And you know, that right there to me is more of lack of communication, a lack of care, a lack of responsibility, and all. And I think that, you know, I think that that really needs to be addressed with the shippers, the receivers, and the, third parties that's all involved with that shipment, you know. And I think that'll cut out on a lot of the cargo thefts also.
Stephen, you brought up a great point, and you're spot on. I interview drivers every day, and I always laugh to myself, because a lot of times my client will say, well, we're sure the driver's involved. I'll be honest with you, but I hate to use that term. That's not right. In the cases I find, it's very rare that I see a driver's involved. It does happen from time to time, but when you're talking, you do this every day, day in and day out, the percentage of drivers being involved is very, very rare. Now, sometimes drivers don't make good decisions, but they're not thieves. But a lot of times they don't make good decisions. It's because exactly what you talked about. You're treated terribly. Hell, you've had a tough day. You try to get to the place. Nobody will let you change the lane. They cut you off. They're fingering you. They're honking the horn, you're yelling at you. You guys got a tough job. So then you get there, and you're like 5 minutes late. They say, sorry, you're not here. We're going to have to turn you away until tomorrow. And it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So now you got all night. You've got to be responsible for that load. And you're exactly right. There needs to be – and I can't tell you how many thefts I get every year. That's the exact story I get. And then you go, well, the driver should have known better. Well, the driver likes to get something to eat. What's he supposed to do? He's got to kill time. I mean, it is. It's a problem, and there should be better communication. Like you said, maybe they need to have an overflow lot that's actually protected by security, you know, with sign-in and sign-out procedures and things to do rather than just leave it up to a guy to go park the, you know, drop his trailer on a wide place in the road, leave it unattended, and then bobtail somewhere, and then come back, and the damn trailer's gone. But you're exactly right, my friend. You're exactly right. That does lead to a lot of theft, more than you'd know.
Yeah, and I just wanted to share that if it was more communications in that area and more urgency over the loads, I think that also will cut down on a lot of the theft. And I appreciate you guys for taking my call.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for thanks for calling.
Thanks,
you know, it makes me wonder sometimes whether what Stephen just what described at the receivers, if sometimes the receivers are involved in the shenanigans. Where, no, we don't have room for you right now. Go to a certain truck stop, and they've got friends waiting at the truck stop.
I haven't seen a lot of that. I think that then, you know, you make a good point, but that's not really necessary. It might happen occasionally, but most of the things with cargo theft is just common sense. It's not real sophisticated, because we have a bad habit when something happens where there looks like there's a, we had a form of theft a couple of years ago where I called it misdirection freight. And we had a large company on the West Coast that had two pallets worth $750,000 of gaming machines. And they had a dedicated carrier. That dedicated carrier, they had strict protocol on how to handle freight. They went there and picked up these two pallets, took it back to their facility in Mira Loma, California. They picked it up in Washington and put it on their dock. And it was supposed to be delivered to two different distribution centers in Rialto and Fontana. Well, they get a call one day from a guy that says, hey, you know those two pallets? And he has all the information. He's got the PO numbers. He's got everything. Leave those there. We'll send a truck over and pick them up. And they did, and they never saw him again. So this happened, and then I had another case that was like that. And to give you the Reader's Digest version, we thought what was going on was somebody was hacking into a system. Some kind of a sophisticated guy from Gdansk, Poland, that could, you know, hack into things. But that wasn't the case. It was really very simple. It was a Latvian kid that flew over here, that all he did was rent a car, flew into SeaTac Airport around the first of the year. He drove the facility I was telling you about where the pallets were at. He drove around the back and sees the name of the trucking company. But what's he do after that? On the second case I had, he drives over to Boise, Idaho, where the second victim was at. Drives around the back. He sees, there's the two carriers are there, large ones. He'd recognize both of them. So then once we put everybody in the room, talk to the computer people, the logistics people, and we figure this thing out, what it was is it was just strictly phishing and spoofing. What they would do is they would call, like one of them is a very large carrier, and they record all their calls. And they might call 30 or 40 times. During the day, they said, we can't tell you that. But at nighttime, you'll get sympathetic overseas operators. So you'll say, hey, I'm looking for something from such and such. So I go, okay, how can I help you? What's the weight of it? Oh, I think it's about 40 pounds. And they go, well, here's one right here, 43.5 pounds. Here's the PO number. Well, once they get that, these guys are home free. And that's how they were doing this. And they're still active now. It's Russians. We had a huge case down in Houston where we caught one of their guys. We found receipts. But it wasn't nearly sophisticated. They're very good at it, but it was very, very simple. It was just done by spoofing and phishing. Nothing to do with any type of computer magic.
Wow. You would hope that people had better practices and that it would be something more sophisticated.
Well, Chuck, what they do, though, again, keep in mind what I said about common sense, and I agree with you, but like in this particular case, what this kid, his 19-year-old Latvian, always had $30,000 with him. Oh, we tracked this kid. He'd have $300,000 wired to him all the time. He had an Airbnb down in Houston. He had storage facilities of stolen product. But what he would do, like on how we actually caught him, one of these large companies called a couple of Texas DPS agents and said, hey, we're going to get hit with a redirection freight case. And they're like, shit, what the hell is that? We don't know what that is. So the guy explained it to him. So they go, well, hell, we can come there and sit and wait for this guy and pinch him when he leaves. Well, this kid shows up, and he's got the company car that's got the junior college that he's allegedly representing. He's got their uniform on. He's got their letterheads, and he's got all the proper documentation to pick up that load. How do you not give it to him? I mean, that's how sophisticated some of these things are. They've got the proper paperwork. How's a warehouse guy going to be smart enough to go, well, that's a fraud? I mean, the paperwork is in order. It's proper. Yeah, the hell, the guy, he just loads freight. Hell, he's not a detective. He's not a cop. He's not a security guy. He's like,
he's a warehouse guy that's supposed to load trucks. I get it.
Exactly. So that's how they get by with it. And like I said, it's not overly sophisticated. It's just very common sense. Everything looks good. It's got the right documentation. We've seen that case after case after case. These guys just have great ways.
Unbelievable.
Of stealing things. And now once you get onto them, then you can kind of say, hey, look for this, or hey, here's what's going on. But if it happens to you the first time or two, it's, like I said, that's what we had with fictitious pickup, where these guys would go on the load board, and then they would get with the broker. If the broker didn't do his due diligence, they would actually get the, and Chuck, you know exactly what I'm talking about, they'd get the carrier packet. So they had all the documentation.
Right.
So even though it might be, supposedly Jeff's trucking was going to pick up, well, they'd intentionally wait till Friday at the end of the day when it's frantic and everybody's ready to go home.
There's
probably only one load left in the warehouse. And even though Jeff's trucking is supposed to pick it up, Chuck's trucking shows up. The guard looks at it, and he's like, well, you're not Jeff's trucking, but, hell, that's the only, you know, this load's the only one back there, so go get it. Who questions that?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you
and
that, know
that's the reality.
We've heard of that where the guard says, are you from Jeff's trucking? Yeah. Me from Jeff's trucking. Oh, yeah, door 7.
But
it's
the BOL. It's got the BO. It's got your SAC code on it. You know, not mine, but it's got yours.
Yep.
But you know,
and a lot of times these guys obviously are going in with either a stolen truck or stolen plates, so you can't even trace them.
Correct. Exactly. So it's, you know, there's so many different variables to things. You know, I've been contacted a couple of times by cable stations, cable TV shows wanting to do it. Like a life, real life thing with me. And I said, guys, look, first of all, I don't want to be a TV star. It'd be kind of, it'd also be hard for me to do my job. And they're saying, well, we'd like to just follow you around and when you bust people and do cargo theft. I said, you guys don't understand. Cargo theft is multifaceted. It doesn't mean it's going to happen on Main Street in Toronto at 7 o'clock at night. It doesn't work that way. It's usually a series of thefts that you get information. You incrementally work them. They all lead to something. It could take months to put something together like that. They just don't understand that it all sounds great, and it is. It's a fascinating industry, but it takes a lot of research, a lot of documentation, and a lot of figuring stuff out.
Yeah, I think you would do much better off. You'd be much better off getting somebody to write a show about what you do and speed it up and take all the boring gumshoe work that you do in a day out of there. And within a half hour or an hour, with if you take off the commercials, I think it's 41 minutes.
There you go.
You know, the theft occurs, and the guy's already tried and on his way to jail. That all happens in 41 minutes, which doesn't happen in 41 months in most of your cases, I'm sure.
One thing I wanted to touch on real briefly we could, as I said, spend hours talking about different subjects, but one thing we've really expanded our business on the last 2 years is our work in Latin America, in Mexico, south of the border. We started getting a lot of inquiries from companies saying, we just can't find out anything down there. Or what? You know, we have a theft. We don't know what to believe. How can we decide on paying it or denying it? We don't know the facts. Well, my associate, Curtis Salisbury, is bilingual in Spanish and Portuguese and loves going down there. When I recruited him, he actually, his job down there, he worked for an aggregate company, and he was down there all the time. So he's very comfortable down there. Well, he has no fear about going down there, but we've developed ex-law enforcement people down there. A lot of times they'll meet us, and they're heavily armed because a lot of the theft down there is cartel. But it's a different theft type. They're blatantly hijack people, and they'll take a driver, and then we want to go talk to the driver, and he's already talked to cops. Well, I says, we'll talk to the driver, and they said, well, he lied to us. Well, hell yes, he lied to you, because he was told by these cartel members, you tell them the truth, I'm going to kill your family. So once we go down there and talk to the guy, we find out what the truth is, but it's a whole different ballgame. We just got a case in today where a huge load of protective masks got hijacked on the 12th. We'll be going down there on that case. But with our context, we can always find out what goes on, and that way the insurance company can decide on how they're going to handle the case. But it's a whole different world down there. I mean, we rarely have violence here in the United States when it comes to cargo theft, because they don't have to. Rarely happens.
Right.
But down there, it's a totally different ballgame.
Wow, it is fascinating. It's too bad it's so costly to all of us. That's the sad part.
Well, it is, and also not only that, but the apathy involved. And what I've always found about theft, a lot of times people shrug their shoulders when it's someone else. But when it's them, or if it's the right person in a hierarchy gets hit by theft, something will be done. And it's always been that way. Ever since I got in this business 40 years ago, it's always been that way. If the right person is the victim, things will get done.
You know what? I think that, in all fairness to everybody involved, the insurance companies, the truckers, everybody, I think we've all done a lousy job making this, it's an epidemic. It's got to be publicized. People don't, that thing I saw on Instagram the other night was the first thing I've seen in the public, as we see it in the industry. We read about it in Transport Topics and all the other rags, but you don't see it so blatant anywhere out there where you should. People need to be made aware of it. This is costing you a lot of money, ladies and gentlemen. When somebody offers you a good deal on a computer, think twice, because it's really costing you a lot of
money.
Time
and our time is just blown by. It's always a fascinating discussion when we get to have Jeff on. We definitely probably get him back. But before we run out of road here, I want to give Jeff an opportunity to tell, if he wants to, if people want to get in contact with him, or if he want to share any information before we get out of here. How do people get in contact with him, or anything that you would like to leave with us before we get out of here, Jeff?
Sure. I mean, you never know when somebody out there could be a witness to something I'm working on. But I can always be contacted 24/7 on my personal cell, which is 817-233-8158. That's 817-233-8158. And also through email, which is all in small casing with no spaces. That's Jeff, J-E-F-F, at T is in Tom, R is in Robert, M is in Mary, US.com. So it's Jeff@trmus.com. And like I said, I'm based out of Dallas. My associate I mentioned that does the Latin America work, Curtis, is based out of Salt Lake City. And then, of course, our partner, Sam Wadwani, who runs the Long Beach office, is based in California. But from that, and like I said, we've got associates, like you mentioned earlier, Rico, in Atlanta. Bob Hastings does the same thing I do. He just doesn't do it on the same scale. He's more regional, but is one of the best investigators I've ever worked with. He's ex-GBI. And like I've always said, in this industry, you need to not be afraid to stick your nose in where it doesn't belong. And Bob is great at that. And he does a lot of the cases down to Atlanta. He's a fantastic investigator. And we've got others throughout the country. Just so people know, a lot of people I've worked with in law enforcement, when they're with a task force like in California or Chicago or Atlanta, when they retire, they say, hey, I want to work with you. And so we've got assets like that all over the country that people have been cargo theft detectives that work under us contractually. So we've pretty much got the whole country covered.
That's fantastic.
Good deal. Well, we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come on and share some information with us. We definitely are most appreciative for you doing so. Chuck, let our good people know how they can get in contact with you and how you can help.
Okay. If anybody needs any help with anything, whether it's getting set up as a carrier of traffic or help with your business, give me a call. My extension is 203. And the phone number is 1-800-388-4352. Again, extension 203. Or email me, chuck@traffix.com. Or send me a private message on Instagram at Chuck Snow, CEO. And with that, Rico, I'll let you back her in the hole for another week.
Absolutely. We want to thank everyone for taking time out of your schedule, whether if you're listening live or if you're listening to a download of the podcast at a later time and date. We definitely appreciate you for doing so. We always welcome your input and your feedback. Please reach out to us on our Facebook page. Let us know if there's any subjects that you would like for us to cover. We never claim to know it all, but if we don't know it or don't have the resources, we'll definitely try to find someone in our network to come on and talk about it. That can bring us a next level of expertise so that you can have the tools that you need to put in your toolbox. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, you could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a little time to hang out with us, and we are always eternally grateful for you doing so. For Chuck Snow and for Jeff, we want to thank you. God bless you. Stay safe out there, everybody. Stay healthy. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and God willing, we'll talk at the same time, same place next week. God bless you and good night.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Catch you on the flip-flop. God bless.